Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. My name is Martha Reddick, and I am your host. And this week, we are going to be talking about preschools and getting your nanny kids ready to make that jump into preschool and what it's like and all of that good stuff. And to walk us through that, I have the beautiful, wonderful, educated, and talented Jennifer Macias. Hello.
Hi, so many accolades. Oh my goodness.
I know. But you deserve them all. Sure.
Cool, thank you.
You can quote me.
I will.
Jennifer has been with us before. She was on the nanny parent relationship episode, but just as a brief reminder of your background. Tell us your background.
Okay, sure. I have a couple bachelor's degrees. I have a master's in early childhood education.
Gotta catch them all.
I know. It's like the Pokemons. I don't know anything about Pokemon, you guys. I'm so old. I have a master's in early childhood education. I have experience as a nanny and also as a preschool teacher. And I'm also getting my master's in couple and family therapy.
Wonderful. Thank you. And that makes you highly qualified for this episode.
Thanks. Dun, da, da,
da. Wonderful. So you have taught at a preschool.
I have.
And so I would love to know those things that preschool teachers wish that they could say to nannies and parents, and they can't because it's not appropriate, but you can on this podcast because I have no stock in...
Sometimes we do say them just like...
God, right. Sometimes you need to.
Yeah. So for the most part, I always just try to be like very open and like chill with my parents. My co-teacher is just the sweetest woman in the world, but sometimes like the more professional and sort of nervous she is, like the higher pitched her voice. And she's so nice, and she doesn't, like the first time I met her, I was like, who is this woman with a squeaky voice? And when I like babysit for parents outside of class, which happens and it's wonderful,
right.
And they're always like, does your co-teacher always talk like that? I'm like, oh no, it's just I think she just like wants to be professional and she gets nervous. So I always try to be very chill, but I mean, especially just talking to parents, consistency is just the biggest key. So
yes.
When parents tour our school, generally they get a printout of like what the schedule is like. So the classroom I work in is 15 to 24 months. So it's the classroom right after the nursery rooms. And it's just this 9-month period where a ton of development is happening in their tiny little brains. And they're just making insane bounds of development. And so we have a more structured class for that reason. And because it's so important, for consistency's sake, we really try to get parents and nannies. I surprisingly don't have like any nannies that come and pick up. Like it's all moms and dads, which is actually pretty impressive considering it's a fancy preschool.
Right.
Where tuition is many dollars. But maybe that's why they don't have a nanny.
Right.
And so, I mean, we always make sure that parents are prepared, that they understand the schedule. For our age group specifically, it's just like you want to wean them off passies, off bottles, off sleep sacks,
mm-hmm.
Because when we take naps at school, we don't use any of those things because in the older toddler classroom, they don't use those things. And right. for the most part, they spend the least amount of time in our classroom because the developmental differences are so great between being an infant and a two-year-old. So in that period for between 15 and 24 months, like so much development is happening that our main goal is also to get them ready to be in the two-year-old room.
Yeah.
Which means like, you know, being a little more independent. And so it always like blows my mind when parents are so floored. For instance, like we teach the kids to take off their own shoes before, mm-hmm. before lunch and nap. And they get the hang of it themselves within, I would say, like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then parents are always so surprised when they, when we tell them like, yeah, they took their shoes off by themselves. We took nap. And they're like, wait, they can do that? Like, I think parents tend to not necessarily underestimate what their kid can do, but they don't see how their child behaves at school.
Right.
And so we always communicate with parents with what we have. They're called daily seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just write down what your kid is, the child has done that day. But we also give parents like a really detailed report. Like this is, you know, like what we're working on today. Like, so we teach sign language. We have them use their words, practice with utensils, sitting at the table.
Do you use glass cups?
Okay. We don't. So the kids have their own sippy cups for water. We give them water literally 10 times a day. Because they sweat a lot and they're tiny little bodies. But we do use like open metal cups, like little baby metal cups for milk at lunch or soy milk for the kids who don't drink dairy. And so that's another that was, we had a couple of kids. It was a huge struggle for them was drinking out of the cup.
Yeah.
And so that's always something that we tell parents to work on. And honestly, it takes, in my experience, it takes about 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks of like fighting and then being grumpy and not having milk. And then all of a sudden one day they just pick up at the cup and they're in it to win it. And that's it. And they're on the cup and no more sippies. So really for us, consistency is really important. And sort of trying to adhere to the schedule that we have, especially for naps, when the kid is like on vacation or staying home some days. Because it really,
or on weekends.
Or on, God, especially on weekends. Because it does, it, they have a really hard time sort of adjusting to nap time.
And when it's every weekend, then you're fighting it Monday and Tuesday. Yeah. And then
and it is. And it's tough because there are, you know, nine other kids who are also trying to nap. So we just try to be really consistent and we always communicate with parents and my co-teacher and I always talk about like, is there anything that you guys do at home that you want us to do here or vice versa? So we can always just be on the same page.
Yeah.
So yeah, after all of that rambling, I would just say consistency really is key and just being communicative and making sure that, you know, the things that we talk about, they're important. So like practicing sign language and using their words and sharing, all of that is stuff that really needs to go on at home too.
Right. Yes.
Because these are things that aren't going to go away. Like once they leave preschool, these are life skills. Basically, yes. We're teaching these tiny people how to be humans.
Right. And they're useful if you do practice them at home. They're useful to continue that and their skills that they can use at home. Sharing mm-hmm. is a huge skill to use at home. Even if they're an only child,
yep.
sharing with your nanny or your mm-hmm.
parent
is huge.
Yeah, we had a situation where we did have an only child and he like would just snatch toys from friends and mm-hmm. it was just, and so we always talked about that and mom was like, so what can we do? And we were like, practice sharing at home. And she was like, I'm not a kid. And we were like,
you can still practice.
We understand that. Yeah. And so it was like, yeah, you can definitely still practice though. Like that sharing is caring mentality is really important.
Yes. Yeah. I completely agree. one of the reasons that I asked about the glass cups is, some kids that I have nannied for go to a Montessori school
mm-hmm.
and in the Montessori school, their philosophy is that kids, when they work with things that are breakable, will learn to treat them like things that are mm-hmm. breakable. And they've broken some cups, but all of those kids can handle at, you know, 2-3 years of age, they can mm-hmm. 100% handle drinking out of a glass cup.
Absolutely.
And knowing that it's important to not drop it.
And that's also a huge philosophy in the Reggio Emilia approach, which is very arts-based and child-driven and child-directed. But it's a very similar approach that children will learn from the mistakes and it also teaches them accountability.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, it's important, especially in this day and age where kids are going to these private preschools and they come from really affluent neighborhoods that they mm-hmm. need to learn personal accountability. And I think that's really important that a lot of our parents, and I'm so proud to say that all of our parents really, really instill those values. I had one kid who was just the most polite child. And his dad was like, I mean, we talked about qualities that we wanted to instill, and it was really being a polite, like, helpful citizen.
Right.
And those are just so refreshing values.
Yes, 100%.
For Nanny specifically, I definitely think it's about just trying to foster a little more independence and adhere to a schedule, and then just kind of develop things like sharing and like practicing that sign language or practicing using certain words, like saying please and thank you.
I've also found teaching kids to clean up after themselves seems to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
In play dates as well as at preschool.
And play dates are a really, really good way to get kids transitioned into being in preschool because it helps socialize them. And I think one of the biggest aims of preschool is really helping kids to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they are only kids who don't have siblings and they have a nanny, they're really used to intense one-on-one interaction. And that's not really available in a preschool because it's usually two teachers and 10 kids. And it's a crazy ratio, and so it is really hard to get a lot of one-on-one time with each student, and so really play dates, but teaching them to clean up is great, and what I usually do is we just give, like, time limits, like, in 2 minutes, we're going to clean up, friends, mm-hmm. And then we'll count down, like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then we all yell, clean up, and then we all clean, and sometimes we sing the cleanup song, and that, like, just making it, like, just another activity makes it really, really fun for them, so helping to clean up is really, that's a huge, important one, and then for nannies, too, helping kids transition into preschool, just talking to them about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, just, like, you're gonna start school soon, and you're gonna make new friends, and you're gonna have teachers, and you're gonna do art projects, and read books, and really just kind of, preparing them mentally for what's about to happen, so they sort of know.
Yeah.
Sometimes doing a dry run, like, if you're the nanny who's gonna be, like, walking them to school, like, go for a walk one day, and walk past the school, and be like, this is where you're gonna be, and it really helps them sort of realize what's happening, and so they're not completely unprepared for it.
That's great advice.
Thank you.
So have you dealt with kids who have killer separation anxiety?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Yes, I would think so. Because I've dealt with it as a nanny, mm-hmm. and I can only imagine how much the stakes are upped when it's not only am I getting dropped off in another place, because as a nanny, you're arriving in their home,
mm-hmm.
and the parents are leaving, but if it's I'm going to a new building that I've never been in before, getting dropped off, and who knows what's gonna happen,
mm-hmm.
I can only imagine that separation anxiety gets much worse.
So the best thing that we recommend for parents is to the drop and go. There are a lot of times we have parents who, like, feel bad that their kid is upset, and so they linger, and that really makes it worse because the longer that they're in the room with a parent and not being held by that parent, the more upset they're going to get.
Right.
And so, like, we have had to talk to parents about this, but we just say, you know, you do the drop and go. You come in. So every morning our parents fill out what's called the seed, and so it's just the kid's name, what time they were dropped off, what time they'll be picked up. And then information about their morning, like how did they sleep? What time did they wake up? What is their mood? What's the last time they ate? And then any notes, like if they have a diaper rash. So generally we have parents fill out the seed and then just say, okay, I love you. I'll see you later. Bye. And then out the door.
Right.
Because we have parents who linger, and it's just like there are times we have to say, like, okay, you have to go. And it's, it is the worst feeling in the world for a teacher to tell a parent, like, can you scram? And most parents know that, like, oh God, I'm making it worse, and they'll leave. But yeah, that's the one advice I have. And as a nanny, that was really hard for me because and I think this is hard for parents too, is that when they get to school, some kids are just like, all right, later, losers. And they immediately, like, hit the books or the toys or the play area. And that's it. And they don't care if mom and dad are leaving. And they're just like, kind of like, but okay.
You're not even saying goodbye.
Love you.
So separation anxiety on the other end.
On the other end. Like, I felt that way as a nanny sometimes where I'd be like, whatever, dude, bye. But there were also days where he wouldn't want me to leave, and I would have to, like, pull him off my leg and hand him to a teacher and be like, okay, buddy, I'll see you tomorrow. And that's either way is kind of difficult. But we really do say just drop and go. And if a kid doesn't, like, isn't making a fuss that you're leaving, then sneak out of there.
Right.
We had one mom who was like, I think it would just kind of hurt her that her kids would be like, okay, later. And so she would like try to like stop them from what they were doing and be like, okay, I'm leaving. And it was just like, you're just trying to get him worked up and that's not good.
Right.
So the drop and go is definitely the way to do it. Like convey what information you need to a teacher about their morning. In my instance, a lot of the times too, I would sort of like convey information between parents and teachers as the nanny.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of like, say what you need to say, handle your business and say bye and leave.
Right.
And that makes it the easiest. And then drop-offs get easier as time goes on and eventually.
And as you develop the routine, because that's another thing with separation anxiety in particular, is that routine of dropping off is really important. So if you're working with a child who has separation anxiety, or you're seeing it start to develop as changes happen, because it always gets worse when there are big changes in their life, is developing that routine so that they know what to expect and sticking to that routine.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge part of it. And eventually, I mean, with a lot of our kids, they get excited to come to school. And so it's not a problem. But you're right. Until that happens, you really just kind of have to stick to your guns. And it can be so hard. And there are definitely times. There was one instance. There was a kid who had been ill. And so he genuinely wasn't feeling well. And mom dropped him off. And he just had the worst meltdown I've ever seen. And she called like 10 minutes later. And he was still crying. And she was like, I'm going to come and get him because I don't feel good about leaving him there. And it's a case-by-case basis. It really depends. But, like, if a kid isn't feeling well or it's really that, like, 10 minutes later and they're still melting down, there might be something else afoot. Sometimes they're getting sick. Sometimes they don't feel well.
Or there are bigger issues I've talked about on the show before. Mm-hmm. There was one child that had terrible separation anxiety that I was only with one day a week. But it turns out that his parents were in therapy for their marriage. And so I think that it was that coming to light through separation anxiety.
And kids, I mean, they're a lot more intuitive than you think, and they can pick up on those things, and that's true too. And so really, like, every family kind of has to assess, like, what is and isn't normal for their child. But for the most part, literally 2 seconds after a parent leaves, the kid is fine.
Right.
There was one drop-off. And this kid normally has great drop-offs. And he was, like, whining and making a ruckus. And the second his parents left, he turned around and he went, hey! And I was like, don't even play. Like, he was literally just, like, whooping up a storm. And his parents left. And he was like, hi. And I was like, you're such a turd.
I'm ready to play.
Yeah. So, I mean, literally most of the time, they're totally fine afterwards. And if a kid does have a rough drop-off, I will make sure to, like, text a photo or, like, just text the parents and let them know, like, hey, we're doing great now. Just to make them feel a little better.
Right. And so, I, as a nanny, that is key, I think, in developing that trust with the parents of, you're not leaving them with me crying all afternoon.
Promise.
Literally, they stop crying 2 minutes after you leave. We're having fun. All as well.
And I feel like a lot of the times nannies, I have worked in a at a different school with nannies, and they, like, they know the drill. Like, they know what's up. They're not fooled by it. And so it is a little bit easier as a teacher to, like, talk with a nanny because they know.
Right. Yes. Whereas a parent might be swayed by a tantrum. I often am like, cry it out.
Feel your feelings, bro. Yeah.
Feel they're legitimate, but I'm not changing my stance.
Yep.
Because you are having a tantrum. And in fact, I usually will teach my kids that I nanny the word tantrum. And so they get to the point where I say, do you know what you're doing right now? And they'll go, throwing a tantrum. And I will say, has that ever worked with me? No. And I'll say, let's try a different tactic. And they usually do try, and sometimes it's successful and sometimes it's not. But I find naming tantrums to them, teaching them that vocabulary word, super helpful in ending tantrums.
It's probably more effective than my method when they usually say hot mess or struggle. That's actually a good call. I should probably incorporate that into my work.
Whatever vocabulary you want to teach them. But
I mean, a lot of the times we just say we don't cry for what we want. Like, you need to be all done tears. Yep. And we say use your words.
Yes, use your words is huge.
And my other huge one is do we cry to get what we want? Does that work? And they usually go, no.
It's yep.
All right. Sign me what you need.
I accidentally have said use your words to my dog before.
I talk to my cats and I say, no, thank you. I don't like that. That is not for your body. So, I mean, I did that to my roommate once. He was like trying to do something to my cat that my cat didn't. I think he was just like petting him roughly. And I like saw it happening and I literally went, roommate. And he like stopped. He's like, did you just teacher voice me? I was like, I did. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. But you were doing something bad.
You were being, no, thank you. I don't like that. He used to use that one when he had been drinking. He'd be like, no, thank you. I don't like that. Like, because he just thought it was funny. He thought it was hysterical.
Yes.
I use that if I'm out and about and a dude is doing things that I don't appreciate. I'm like, no, thank you. I don't like that. You are all done. So, I mean, the verbiage carries.
My body, my choice.
Yeah, exactly. That is not for your hands.
Right. great. Before we get too off topic. What do you wish that kids knew when they walked into your classroom that nannies or parents can help set those kids up for success?
That preschool is so fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally play all day and you read books and you sing songs and you eat and you sleep and then you play outside. So literally we just try to get parents to say like, it's going to be fun. It's going to be okay. And I promise we are coming back. Yes. I think kids' biggest worry is like, oh my God, they're not going to be here.
Right.
That's the biggest thing. And like, it's going to be fun. I promise.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay.
Right. And I do agree with what you said earlier about talking to them about preschool way ahead of time. Because you have to sign up for preschool so far ahead of time. You know that they're going to be going into it. So talking to them about it, answering questions so that they have all their questions answered or the questions that are coming up in that moment. Maybe not all of them, but answering those questions and just having conversations about it is huge.
Yeah. And letting them know, like, it's okay. It's something they can talk about. I think the biggest problem that kids have when they're going to preschool at any age is that they feel like this isn't their choice and they don't have control. And there is that like autonomy versus sort of like dependence thing that kids go through at a certain developmental stages. And you just have to do your best to honor their autonomy by answering their questions. I mean, obviously they can't like choose whether or not they go to preschool.
Right.
But parents can definitely at least let the kids feel
their feelings.
Like their feelings, but also that, like, you know, they have opinions that are valid.
Right. Yes. And giving them, I have found giving them choices before drop off. So do you want to put on your coat inside or outside? You know, like things like that, depending on how bad the winter is.
Absolutely. No, and that's a really good thing. I mean, that was something that as a nanny, I really had to... Bargaining was a huge tool for me with my nanny bug because there were days where he wanted me to do it. There were days where he wanted to do it himself. There were days where he didn't want any of it. And so it was really like, do you want to do this? You want me to do this?
Right.
And he would pick one. And on the days where he would get really upset, and I was like, all right, you can do this or I can do it. But if I do it, you're not going to be pleased.
Right.
And so they were like, oh, just kidding. But yeah, as long as they know that like preschool is fun and they're going to have a great time and that mom and dad will be back.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest tip.
Yes. What is a typical day? You've kind of touched on it, but what does a typical day in your classroom look like?
So I said this before, I'm in the 15 to 24 month room. Sorry, forgot about that. So our school opens at 7 and we close at 6 and our drop-offs, I mean, like most parents can like drop off whenever they're ready, but usually our latest drop off is at 9 and our earliest drop off can be like right at 7 on the dot.
Right.
When I open the classroom, I usually get there pretty early to have everything set up. So when the kids get there, I'm like ready to roll. So generally in the morning it's free play, and like morning diapers. And the school I work at, we use cloth diapers. So we have to build in a little more time for that because they take a little longer. So between 7 and 9, it's free play and diapers. From around like 9 to 9:15, we usually do circle time or an art activity. And circle time happens every day at 9 o'clock. And we sing the ABCs and we count and we, you know, read books and we work on, we usually have vocabulary for the week. So we always have a lesson plan for the week.
Right.
That consists of vocabulary, a book of the week, a sign of the week, and a song of the week. And so we do all that stuff. And then usually between 9:15 and 9:30 is usually art. always there's some sort of themed art project happening, and they're always so fun. 9:30 to 10 is snack, and then we have gross motor. Depending on like the weather, it can be an hour or it can be a half an hour. And then after that is more free play or another activity, depending on how rowdy the kids get. On the days where they're a little squirrely, we try to have more structure in the day so we can eliminate their accidents. Always happen, you know, kids bonking heads, and I mean, obviously they're at the age where they bite one another and fight over toys, and so that's a whole. Parents, don't feel bad if your kid bites somebody. It is totally normal, and it is scary, but I promise no one is blaming anybody.
Yes.
That's the one thing I feel so bad about, is parents feel so bad. It's like, is my kid going to get kicked out of preschool? And I'm like, no, no, no. Only if it happens a lot, but generally no. So we try to have some structure. We have lunch at 11:30 until noon, and then... Oh, we also have... Sorry, I keep forgetting about things.
That's okay.
So after gross motor, we have some structured play, and then we have music class.
Mm-hmm.
And our music teacher comes in, and he has an instrument of the week.
And that's awesome.
It is so fun. They love music. The kids love to dance. He has an accordion that is like his standby that he always brings. And then there's like a guest. He calls it a guest instrument. That's what it is. And then the kids all get a chance to play. Like every kid gets a chance to strum a guitar or, I don't know, do the spoons or play the accordion. And then we have lunch, we have nap. Nap usually lasts from about like 12 to 3. We have some pretty rockin' nappers. Nap time is always really hectic because it's two adults trying to put down 10 toddlers.
Right.
Some kids fall asleep on their own, and that's where communication comes in handy with nanny, with parents. It's just like who gets patted down, who's sleep training, who who needs what for nap time.
Right.
And then the afternoon again is just gross motor, Spanish. Spanish is a huge hit. It's all learning Spanish through song, and the kids get really into it and they dance, and it's just so much fun. Yeah, it's adorable. And then usually around the end of the day, we have afternoon snack. We have afternoon gross motor. Diapers happen all throughout the day, basically.
Oh God.
Every 2 hours we change diapers. And then pickups usually start anywhere from like 3:30 to 4, and then period. I mean, just gradually the kids trickle out between 4 and 6, and that's a day. So it is a lot of structure. In the older toddler classrooms, it's a little more, there's more free play, because the kids are at the age where they do play together.
Right.
And then they just want to explore all sorts of stuff, and so we give them the space to do that.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds like a really long day, but...
It's such a long... It is. I mean, we have some kids who get there at like 7:30 and leave at 5:40. Technically, our last pickup is 5:45.
Right.
But there are parents...
I now understand why you don't have nannies, because you are the nannies.
Yeah. I mean, and that's... God, that blows my mind. There was one day I was like sitting there and the kids were eating snack, and I looked at my co-teacher and I was like, we spend more time with these kids than their parents do. And she just looked at me like... Duh. But we really do. Like, we see these kids more than their parents do, and that's crazy. And that's it's a big responsibility when you think about it. And it also, that responsibility, what makes it easier on us is having parents and nannies cooperate with the things that we're sort of trying to teach in life for these kids. But yeah, you're right. It is a really long day. And now that I think about it, it's a roll on.
Because that's, I mean, that's my nanny schedule when the kids aren't in school, is 7:30 to 5:30. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a very long day.
It doesn't play. And yeah, for the kids who are there, like for most of that day, it is, they're the ones who get really sad, like around pickups, like around 5:30, they start to get like really sensitive and really upset because all their friends are leaving. And that's tough.
Yeah, that is tough. But it's nice that they're getting sad over their friends leaving, because it means...
They do. Oh, my God. Like, they all love each other so much. There's hand-holding and kissing and lots of hugs. And it is
great.
Just a room of love. And it is really nice. It's my favorite thing when they all hug each other.
I bet.
There are a lot of bromances. There are two little boys who were in the nursery together. And they came into our classroom at the same time. And they just love each other so much. like one kid... like they call each other their own name because they hear it so much from that person. They're like, oh, we have the same, we're the same person, right? Yeah, it's
adorable.
It's the best.
Any book recommendations?
The books that I really recommend for parents are the Little Blue Truck series, How Does a Dinosaur... Like, how does a dinosaur say goodnight is my jam, and I have that book memorized because I have read it 1 million times, approximately. And the Llama Llama books. All of those books are, the kids love them, and they're really fun to read. I do all of the voices and the weird sound effects. But they also, like, help kids learn about things like sharing and bedtime and taking turns, using your words. And so those are really, really important books to have. Any kind of book that talks about, like, bedtime routines. There's another book called Where's Dave? And it's, like, a touch and feel book. And they talk about, like, different types of safety around the house. Like, don't touch the stove because it's hot. And that's great because there was a kid in my class who actually did that at home. He, like, touched a hot stove. And every time we read the book Where's Dave, he would go hot. And he would, like, touch the page and go, ow. And I was like, yeah, buddy, that's hot. You learned that. And he was like, yeah. Very serious. He really did learn it the hard way. It felt so bad. But those kinds of, any books that really, like, teach kids a thing, it's great. Books about blended families, about different types of families, body parts, like just head, shoulders, knees, and toes type stuff. All of that's really, really crucial. But literally just reading anything broadens a child's capacity for language astronomically.
Right. Yes. There's lots of studies on that.
There's a reason that reading is fundamental. Like, it really is. It helps kids develop language faster and be able to name their feelings faster.
And just, this is my own personal little plug, The Paperback Princess.
I haven't heard of this.
Oh, it is wonderful for fighting against gender stereotypes.
That's another one. Yeah. Anything that sort of battles gender stereotypes is a huge, huge plus.
Because it starts so early. And we talked about that in the Male Nannies episode. But it starts so early where children are told that for their gender, they need to behave in a certain way. And so books that battle that, I think, are wonderful. Another really, really great one that might not be great for toddlers, but for slightly older, is Cinder Edna. It's about Cinderella's next door neighbor. And she does chores and buys a bus ticket. She makes her own dress. She wears loafers to the ball. And then she marries the prince's younger brother, Rudolph, I think is his name. And they live next door and they have a garden and their house is solar powered. And
that's amazing.
It's just the best book ever. Yeah,
I mean, any book that really teaches kids the values that, you know, parents want them to have. And like what you mentioned about gender roles. We don't play that game at our school. Like, gender, and especially for this age group. I mean, up until like 5-6 years old, gender doesn't really exist for these kids. I mean, when you're potty training preschoolers, they literally all stand in a line with their pants down waiting to go to the bathroom. So they all see each other's parts and they're not weirded out by it because they haven't learned to be self-conscious about their bodies. And there's something like so pure and innocent that we don't want to taint that for them. So we don't make kids, you know, feel uncomfortable about their bodies. If like there's one amazing child who he loves to wear the princess dresses.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, man, like you can be a princess. You can be Elsa. Like this girl can be the fire chief. Like we don't play that gender game. And there was one teacher who really did that. And she would like kind of like, not like tease, but like sort of pick on like the boys that wanted to wear dresses. And you know, a lot of her fellow teachers like really shut that down. Like, that's not okay. Yes, you can't make kids feel self-conscious about who they feel that they are,
right, or who they want to be for like a second.
A hot minute.
That's the other thing, is it's like, yeah, they're trying on so many identities because they're figuring it out.
Literally all of this is new to them. Like, they have been on this, I mean, like, think about this. Like, there are children who have only really been like conscious and aware for 4 years.
Right.
They're brand new to this whole human thing. And we have to let them sort of explore that. And I think that's like a huge thing that, like, as a nanny, I loved like being imaginative and being creative and creating adventures and pillow forts, because they're still learning who they are and where they want to fit in this world. And if they want to fit in this world in a skirt, then let's do this.
Great. Yeah. And also, if they want to be a super big, you know, macho boy, that's okay, too. Yeah. That's great, too. If they actually are interested in tools.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. And I mean, that just kind of reminded me of another thing we said, that like kids at this age, even as young as like 18 months, are asking questions about their body parts. There was an amazing kid in my class who took swimming lessons and wanted to know what his nipples were. And he would like, touch the other kid's nipples and be like, that and his parents were just up front. They're like, those are nipples. And so he would like, anytime we like had to take his shirt off to change him, he'd be like, nipples. And that's like, don't like, not, and nannies, I mean, and parents both, like, don't stigmatize the body. There's no reason to make it like this taboo gross thing at any age,
right?
And so always using like the term, like, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a toddler say penis, right? And every time I laugh because it's hilarious because I'm a child, right? But it's also so refreshing that they're not using some like nickname for it that sort of stigmatizes the thing itself.
Yes, that is really good advice. Although as a nanny, always check with the parents because they might have a different belief than you do about it. So
definitely
that's something that you don't get to decide as a nanny.
Yeah, for sure.
But in a classroom, it's different.
And we always tell parents too, like, they heard this word from a friend today, just so you know, just this so you is know. Where they're picking it up. But also, you know, as a rule, as at school, we don't stigmatize body parts.
Right.
And most parents are like, oh yeah, no, they know those words. Like hearing a young child say testicles is just a life experience.
That is. That's something that not many professions experience.
But you're right, like, that's absolutely, it is the parent's choice, and that is definitely something that, like, as an educator, I have to be reminded of sometimes, right? Like, my co-teacher and I often like check ourselves and check each other, like, let's run this by them first and make sure that this is cool,
right?
Because you definitely want to be sensitive to parental preferences, because it's their child.
Yep, their child, their choice.
Yeah.
But yes, I completely agree that as long as you got that okay from the parent, actually using the correct terminology for body parts is the best way to go.
And then again, just scheduling consistency are really like the best ways for nannies to help make that transition easier for the kids and for the parents, because parents can also have a little anxiety about that. And so nannies helping to normalize that, it makes a huge difference.
Yes, I completely agree. And it is very easy, I think, when you are the nanny, to kind of get into your own schedule, but that can change wildly from day to day. And just being cognizant of the fact that if they are entering into preschool, that adding a little bit more structure to the day of like, okay, in the morning, we're going to either do an activity or go to the park, you know, like one of those two things, depending on weather. And then nap happens at the same time. Mm-hmm. Lunch happens at the same time. Things like that.
And there's actually, I didn't think about this. Kids that go to preschool part time. So they're either Tuesday, Thursday or Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And those days where they're not at school, again, you're right. It's just about like keeping it consistent. I mean, and like Fridays are lax days. Usually everyone is just all done. Fridays, right. It's the end of the week. We're all done caring. Not really, but
right.
Everything's a little
caring
more lax.
About the tiny minutia, little, the minutia.
But definitely, like, that's a really good point. Like, kids who are part time at preschool, just being trying as much as you can to be consistent. Like, obviously, there are always variables, having to run errands. You know, like, things come up in life that you can't control, and we completely understand that. But like, being as consistent as possible is basically just our biggest thing.
Right. And also asking questions, I think, either from the parents or the teachers, because I know a lot of times that crossover time between teachers and nannies or parents is so small that it can be difficult. But asking questions about, I think that seed that you guys do is so great.
We try to make a point. So it depends on how crazy things are at the end of the day, but we definitely try to make a point to talk to every parent or nanny that comes to pick up. To just say like, hey, this is what we did today. Like, here are some issues that we had, or here was something awesome that happened. And really just being communicative. I mean, because like, since we use a cloth diapering service, parents have like various supplies that they need to be bringing in.
Right.
But it is. It's just about communication at that. Those transition times are kind of tricky, and especially with a nanny, because sometimes the nanny's like, I don't want to overstep my bounds, like, and say something on the parent's behalf. And like, experience from being in that position, I always like text a mom or dad and say, hey, is there anything that like I need to let the school know, or anything that you need to know, and just kind of acting like a liaison between the parents and the school. Sometimes a really helpful thing for nannies right. to do.
But also just knowing what the routine is to mm-hmm. keep with it. If you are in a situation where the kids are going to preschool Monday, Wednesday, Friday, things like that, mm-hmm. that knowing what time they nap is important really to find important. Out.
We also have, so we print out schedules of what their meals and snacks are going to be. So mm-hmm. they have a morning snack, a lunch, an afternoon snack, and then go home pretzels. Yeah.
It's pretzels every time.
So at the end of the day, around like 5 o'clock, we do pretzels at the end of the day.
Nice.
And it's, is a very important part of the day. Like if a kid gets picked up before pretzels, they want to wait to get their pretzels. That's it is so serious funny. Business. They're very cute.
It's like a Pavlovian.
It is. They know what time it happens. And we have our lady that the kids call her the snack teacher. But whenever she comes into our room and they know what's happening, there's no trying to get them to focus on anything else.
Right.
But we also have, schedules of like what the lunches and snacks are going to be. And that's another thing. Like if you as a nanny know like, okay, they don't really like this lunch or the snack, making sure that you communicate that and say like, hey, I have these other things. And we always allow parents to bring in outside food. Like if they know that their kid is going to have trouble eating something or that they won't like it, you know, always making sure that we're aware of that. So we can right. provide them another option.
Yeah.
It's always really important.
That's great. Well, now mm-hmm. it is the time, story time. Did you bring a story for us?
I feel like I have so many stories. Most of my stories are about just like the weird things that kids say mm-hmm. In like the most casual tones that just kill me. There was one kid in my class who I don't think he had even turned 2 yet, but he was just a very conversational child. And every time I walked in the classroom, he'd be like, hi, Jen. And be like, what's up, buddy? And then some days he'd just go, hey, Jen, do you like pizza? I was like, yeah, buddy, I do. But kids saying, like, just being excited to see you is the best. When I started graduate school, I started subbing. And I walked into a classroom one day and a kid that was in my toddler room had transitioned to the older toddler rooms and I was subbing in that class. And I walked in the door and he literally turned around from eating a snack and he goes, hi, Jen, welcome back. And I was like, hi, buddy. So that's just the best thing ever. It's just like when kids are excited to see you. Yes. It also feels really great when kids are excited to see you and their parents see that. So they know the kid mm-hmm. isn't like freaking out. And then just one instance where a child told another child, no one likes you. because he heard a teacher say, hey, buddy, no one likes that. When this child was like taking books from his friends and banging them on the table. So just kids parroting things that you say in just the completely worst way is just awful.
Yes, they are little mirrors. Yeah. And I've heard one of the kids that I nanny, their microwave goes off so quickly, like it'll beep and then not even 10 seconds later, it'll beep again faster. And so I'm like, okay, microwave, we hear you, when we're like off mm-hmm. doing something else. And to hear the kid say that is so funny mm-hmm. because it happened and he goes, okay, microwave, we hear you.
Yeah. Like, my thing too that I do all the time, I always call kids bro. I'm like, bro, no thank you. And so that was definitely like part of the language in my class is like, no bro. And I was like, oh God, I gotta stop this. Or saying, what's up, baby? And there was this, oh my God, this little girl, her parents were on vacation and her grandparents were staying with her, and she called her grandpa baby. She'd be like, what's up, baby? And I was like, sir, I am so sorry. That's on me. But for the most part, luckily, thankfully, our parents think it's funny.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so lots of bros.
Yeah, but just that bro. They are. They're little parrots, mm-hmm. but through the weirdest filter that you can never predict.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's perfect.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening. I will see you next week. The Chronicles of Nanny is produced by Martha Reddick and Logan Nielsen. Artwork and logo by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.